Hi, everyone, and welcome to yet another special Talking Song episode. Andrew's with us. Welcome.
Hi, Daniel.
So nice having you here. And for those of you who don't know Andrew, really what happened was I think I made this video talking about, like, if we want to leave taking medication or move from the couch, we can sort of make a decision and stick with it. And then you wrote me an email saying I did something I called Mopasti, make a plan and stick to it, Mopasti. And I love that concept. And then you wrote me another email saying you'd like to share some other thoughts and ideas, etc. So welcome again. Yeah. And I thought we could just start with, tell us a little bit about, your own journey through insomnia and how that started.
Yeah, it was late 2015, and I'd had ons and offs with bits of sleep problems, well, a long time, but kind of earlier that year, particularly. And then when it got to this point, as you know, it's just one little thing that can trigger it. And what it was, I like model railways, and my brother was building something, a little building for my railway, and he'd been painting it in the evening. And I was kind of showing him help. I mean, he was doing it himself, but I was kind of helping him, showing him some ideas and that kind of thing. And he was getting a bit frustrated that the paint wouldn't go on properly and this kind of thing. And then I went to bed, and then not long, maybe 10 minutes, I was kind of lying there and I felt like he blamed me for what was going on. And that kind of kept buzzing around my head. So I thought, I'm going to have to get up, because he was still downstairs working with it kind of thing. So I went downstairs and I kind of told him this kind of thing. He said, no, it's just the way I am kind of thing. I get frustrated with things and whatever, there's no problem. And I went back to bed, but that was enough to trip me up then. It was like somehow it was still floating around my head and this kind of thing. And then I didn't sleep that night. I was very little if I slept that night at all. And I'm very wary of driving if I hadn't slept much. So I decided to call in work and say I wouldn't come in that day because of the sleep. And then also when I get anxious, sometimes I get skipped heartbeats. So the following night I had quite a few skipped heartbeats, and that kept me awake again. So again, I was calling in work kind of sick, and it just kind of spiraled on from there. It was like, oh no, as you know, more. I still haven't slept. What am I going to do? Maybe I should go to the doctor. This kind of thing. I think sometimes the approach of my employer at the time is a bit not helpful, because they're trying to be really helpful, but they're trying to be really helpful by suggesting lots of things, by asking me to call in, tell me how I am, how am I doing, and that means I'm focusing very much on how I'm feeling, how I'm doing, and so on. And then it just spiraled from there, really. It was like two or three medications, try this, try that from the doctor. I rang, I think my employer had an employee's helpline. So I rang them to try and maybe get some counselling or something like that. The kind of the first person you speak to isn't the counsellor, they're just kind of the person who works out what you want and tries to put you on the list and so on. And they suggested valerian, which I tried, and it's like, oh, that's terrible stuff. It just makes you feel like death, but doesn't make you sleep. It's like that. So, you know, again, it's like, and I don't like taking things anyway, generally, for anything, really, even headaches and stuff. So it just kind of all spiraled out from there, and I was off work for about 3 months, through various medications, various attempts at counselling and this kind of thing. And there was no direct, as you know, there's no direct route out of it. It's not like, oh yeah, there's that thing, I'm fine kind of thing. So I can't really place how I truly worked my way out kind of thing. But I know, you know, a lot of it was, which is what my past is thinking about. It's like getting your normal life activated again, because you shut down so much, you stop doing things you would normally do. You're protecting yourself. You know, you're avoiding things that so supposedly stressful, you know, maybe what I would normally watch, I can't think of the exact details now, but maybe what I would normally watch on TV, I wouldn't watch it anymore. That's a bit stressful. I'll not watch that. I'll just watch nice, you know, cuddly things on the television and that kind of thing. And then, you know, as your normal life builds up, it kind of, that's my thinking is that's kind of the route out of it, really. So that's yeah. Just, it's a long while ago since I've had the main thing, so I can't give you a a lot of the detail, but that's kind of the gist of it.
No, absolutely. I think that was a very clear picture, and and this was again way before you found like our channel here. You had had this bout with insomnia, and I think it sounds like you saw that instead of like restricting your life, you started maybe like living more freely, and then the insomnia sort of faded away.
Yeah, like I said, it's difficult to actually place the journey out of it for myself now, but I know there was nothing really was changing until I started going back to work again. I thought, well, I'm just gonna have to go, maybe start doing a few things, and I think that the route out happened there when I was when some of my mind was starting to engage with normal things again, you know.
And now, this makes me curious because I think what you describe happens quite often. And then, what can be a little tricky though is that the person who's gone through this episode, it's not really clear to them why they had trouble sleeping in the first place. And then later on, there can be some other trigger in life, and then the worry comes back, like, what if I don't sleep again? And they can have, a repeat episode. But what happened for you after that?
I think there were kind no, because I've had anxiety issues for a long time, I kind of understand what's going on. But when you're in the midst of it, it's difficult to actually implement practically that understanding. But I do remember a couple of or one occasion, certainly, and this probably implies there's more than one occasion, of being lying in bed. I don't know what time it would have been. I certainly hadn't slept. But somehow knowing that this is good, I know I'm just going to do my normal activities tomorrow. I know that's the right thing to do. And probably a bit fearful, but somehow that sense of whatever goes through my head, whatever happens in terms of sleep tonight, I'm just going to do my normal activity. There's something right about doing that kind of thing and
Yes.
kind of leaving it to do whatever it feels like doing kind of thing. But my plan is to get on with my activities.
I think it's very nice to hear this. It seems like you sort of intuitively knew that if I'm trying to fight this battle, this resist this, it's probably not the way. The way is more to just do what I plan to do, which we know is so helpful. Now, this makes me curious. Did you how did you come across like our channel? Was it that particular episode I talked about that you saw, or had you seen it before? Or...
I know. I think I've only come across your channel since all that had kind of faded away, really. I can't directly place it. I'm an analytical person, which kind of gets me into a mess sometimes. But it also means I'm interested in the principles now. So I started watching your channel, presume, oh, this is interesting. This is how you approach things and so on, and kind of. Was a thing that fitted in with my approach to the thing. I think, well, Daniel's obviously, for example, you don't, the kind of things you've changed as you've come out from a pure CBTI and into your own ways of doing it, that you're looking at how things work. You're saying this doesn't quite work the way it's supposed to, and this kind of thing. I'm thinking that's kind of how I relate to things, and possibly also as well. I think I've asked you a few questions in the past about this. Kind of how can you kind of move it over into a general anxiety type approach as well as just an insomnia method of dealing with insomnia. And I think probably somewhere in there was where I found your channel and where I thought I'm going to have a good listen to how you work with things and maybe I can help myself in other ways as well as with sleep.
Okay, very, very, very fascinating. I'm glad you found it. And so with that said, now I want to really talk about like these concepts and ideas that you have. And one of them is, of course, Mopasti. So maybe tell us about the origin story and expand on this idea.
What it is, you've heard of Claire Weeks, I think you've mentioned her a few times on your channel. And there's a video, originally it would have been LP records, but that's that's you can find it on YouTube somewhere. And one of the things she's talking about is people who have a lot of anxiety who tend to not go out, tend to stay in the house and kind of hide away. And she says it's not really agoraphobia because you're not truly afraid of being out. What you're afraid of is how you'll feel. You might have a panic attack or you might feel very anxious when you're out. And she's saying when you go out, when you decide to try to work through this, don't go out with this idea of I'll see how far I get. She said, because then you're just looking at how you feel, you're checking things, you're immediately going, is that fair enough? Shall I go back? There's all kinds of decisions going on. That's not helpful. She said, make a decision. I'm going to go to the shop, certain place. I'm going to walk at a sense, I'm not going to rush. And I'm going to do a specific thing. I'm going to buy a particular thing and then come back. And in a way that I thought, yeah, that's what she's saying. So you have to be quite specific in what you're intending to do. Otherwise, you start going up, your mind's going off into all kinds of distractions and you're kind of worrying about things. And then when I looked at all the kinds of therapy, all those suggestions from people, I kind of hear the same thing in them, that they're in disguised, not disguised, not intentionally, but that they're hidden under other things. Like I had some CBT, not CBTI, I had some CBT 10 years ago, maybe something like that. And the part of CBT that gets kind of talked about is the analytical part. It's the bit where you look at your thought and go, oh, perhaps I'm thinking wrong, but this is black and white thinking. Perhaps I should, there are other options available to me. But there was a second part that doesn't really get talked about, which is once you've kind of worked through that, you then test the hypothesis, the possibility that what you're thinking may be wrong. So, and it's something like, I don't know, somebody won't like me for making a suggestion at work. And then, you do the analytical thing. Well, they're not going to, everybody suddenly dislike you because you make a sensible suggestion, this kind of thing. But you then have to test it. You have to make a little suggestion or something like that and see how it works. And that's kind of the same thing. It's making that plan to go. You're not making some plan of some like a unconnected thing. It's something that's of relevance to your life. So I want to be able to suggest things, or I want to be able to go to certain places and this kind of thing. And you plan to do it, and you do it as an experiment. You see, did anything go wrong? Did I turn into the worst person in the company, kind of thing, because I made this suggestion, that kind of thing. And I thought, it's the same thing. You're planning to do a thing with a firm enough plan that you're not kind of going to kind of squirm out of it on the way. And then you carry it through and see what happens. And it looked like other things. I mean, I'm no expert on therapies, but it looks like it, when I start thinking about it, a lot of therapies are about, there's a lot of kind of teaching, a lot of knowledge involved at the beginning, a lot of analysis sometimes. When it comes down to what they're really doing, it's just encouraging you to actually go and try stuff, go back into the things that you were withdrawing from. And I thought, maybe that's kind of the core of what the actual functional bit of the therapy. The other bits are just kind of giving you enough courage or enthusiasm for doing that thing. I remember going to one therapist once, and basically all she did was worked me up into this state of enthusiasm kind of thing. I walked out the door and I didn't know what I was doing because I was just enthusiastic, but I didn't know what for. So I think the same thing. It's like, they're getting you going and then, right, do that thing, do the thing you wanted to do anyway. But it's that bit that I think actually does the is the benefit.
Yeah, no, I believe it very much because we can cognitively we can s understand things, but a lot of the lot of the like the transformational process that is experiential. It's like when the brain actually experiences something and understands that, okay, I was up all night, that's true, but I'm still safe, and I put myself in that place. I was willing to experience that, and I'm still safe. I'm okay. That experiential knowledge is very, very valuable. So I believe it very much. I believe in the Malpaste very much. And in your case, by the way, do you remember specific examples of when you sort of used it?
It's difficult. I tend to remember it in reverse. I tend to remember the fact that, oh, that was a stupid idea what I was doing because I was doing too much kind of paying attention to how I felt at the time, this kind of thing, and thinking you'd have been better off just kind of going for it. I mean, I do have one thing which isn't anxiety as such. I won't give you the detail exactly, but there was a thing that I'd always wanted to do, but that was I'd never kind of I've done it with my friends, but I've never done it in public. And for some reason, I just this kind of thing, came to this conclusion: I'm gonna have to try, I'm gonna never do it unless I actually try this. And one kind of advantage, as it were, is like once I'm out there, I can't avoid it. Then kind of I'm out in the arena, as it were. And I was literally physically quaking, shaking. I do amateur dramatics sometimes, and it felt exactly like it does when just about when I'm going about to go on stage. It's like I'm legs are shaking, this kind of thing. Went through it, got back home, and that was awful, but it was the right, it felt like it was the right thing to have done. And then I also knew that it would be a good idea to repeat it pretty quickly, fairly soon the same day or the next day, and
Yes,
that kind of
yes.
thing. So yeah, it kind of it developed, like I say, this wasn't an anxiety thing as such, but it was a thing that I was kind of it's my thing that I'd never quite been comfortable about doing. But I did. I don't want. I'm not telling you what it is, but I did eventually do it. And it's that same thing. It's that you have enough of a definite idea what you're going to do, so you can't kind of squirm out of it, sneak out of it, because that's what your mind wants you to do. It wants you to be safe by not doing it, not by cheating it in some way, and that kind of thing.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And you know, just to maybe some concluding remarks on Mapasti, and where I see it fitting in with like Natto and our philosophy was specifically like when somebody has this conflict, they're like, I'm taking the supplement, but I don't want to take it, or I'm sleeping on the couch, but I actually don't want to sleep on the couch. And they see what they want to do, but they're not sure how to arrive there. Then I think the Mapasti idea is very nice, because when it's like, oh, I'm gonna see tonight, I'm gonna go into the lay down on my in my own bed and see if I fall asleep there. Well, then it's just gonna be like the Claire Weeks example, where we're like, you know, we're like self-monitoring. We're like, what am I doing? Am I doing? Should I abort this? Should I do this? Should I do that? But rather, when we like, no, I have a plan and I'm gonna see it through. I'm just gonna go to my bed and that's where I sleep from now on. That really, really helps. So I saw that fitting in very nicely in our way of thinking. Now, there were you had actually I have the email. I can pull it up if we'd like to. But you had some other topics that you know you'd like to talk about. So go ahead.
They kind of connect. I'm just put my glasses on. They're kind of similar things. The things that have happened to me during the insomnia and afterwards that I've kind of gone, oh, that was a bad idea. What was I doing? And realizing. And one was I was on holiday in Scotland with my brother, and we'd been for a little walk just to look at, we went to archaeological remains, so we were looking at something. And then we got back to the car, and my brother said, "Do you want to have a longer walk here, or should we go somewhere else and drive somewhere else and have a walk?" And my mind went into like meltdown, because I was trying to work out which of these two walks was best for sleep. Seems ridiculous, but you know what it'll be like. So I was going around things like, well, one walk will be near water, and I like being near water because I might see water birds, and that's nice and relaxing. The other walk was in woods, but that'd be better because it might not be as windy in there, and the windy might frustrate me and my and all this kind of which is the most relaxing, which is the best. And I literally couldn't decide. I was just like rooted to the spot trying to make this decision. And like when you know when you look at it with perspective, you go, the problem isn't which walk it is. It's like the problem isn't whether you're sleeping in on the couch or in bed. It's the fact that you're spinning it round your head. And every time you think, is that better? Is that better? You're telling your mind to be afraid of the results, to be afraid of the sleep or lack of sleep that you get. And then, that night or the night after, whatever, it's going to be firing you off with anxiety because you've been telling it to, you've been telling it how dangerous this is to not come up with the correct decision. And then it's going to alert you, it's like, danger, danger. You'll be telling me it's dangerous all the time. So here you are, it's bedtime. Wake up, kind of thing, be alert.
No, that's a big one. Seeing this, like, when we're scared, it can seem like I have to make the right decision. When it's in reality, it's kind of like magical thinking. It has that has nothing to do with whether we sleep or not. But so helpful to see that.
It's like microscopic difference that is no, it's just not going to have an effect. There's so many other things that are going to have greater effects on your sleep that are irrelevant compared to that kind of thing. But yet you try to find these little bits. It's like if you get maybe if you get blackout curtains or something like that, and you put if you just go, oh,
Oh no, something happened there. We lost Andrew. Let's see. Let's see if he can come back.
Can you
There
see
you
it?
are.
Sorry, yeah, something must have gone strange.
All right.
But we're here too.
No worries. You were just saying like you're kind of microscopically like digesting things and trying to find the
Yeah,
right.
I was saying like if you're thinking about getting blackout curtains, it's that's if you just go, oh yeah, whatever, I'll get some or not, that's not the problem. But if you start going, are they the best ones? Is there going to be a slight chink? Is that going to keep me awake? Or what happens if this? Again, you're doing the same thing. It's not the existence of the curtains or lack of them that's the problem. It's the spinning it around your head that's gonna program them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And do you have an acronym for that one, or have you named that one yet?
No, I think it's kind of the same thing, really, isn't it, in a way, isn't it? Just get them or don't get them. Make a plan to get them or not, but
All
don't.
right. Very, very nice. No, that's a big one for sure. And I think you had more. Keep teaching us.
Again, they kind of come from the same thing, really. With my anxiety, I'd read this thing saying that this guy was talking about, he called it unstructured play, which is like play where you're not kind of coming up with a win or a lose and that kind of thing. So he's saying that playing frisbee was good for anxiety because it was unstructured, it didn't have any goals, you weren't winning and losing with your friend. So I then became obsessed with playing frisbee, and the issue again is the same thing that what I ended up in this situation was I was like fearing my friends not being available for playing, so I must play frisbee with my friends. I need to find someone who's going to play at the weekend, and so many hours or whatever this guy. Oh no, the weather's bad. We can't do it, and that kind of thing. It's the same. You end up in the same.
Yeah, no, this one is sort of fascinating because like the underlying idea I think is so very sound that there is no winning or losing. Like when we think of sleep, for example, as like we think of sleeping as like I won, yeah, victory, then we just create performance anxiety because we want to repeat this and we actually don't have any control of our sleep. So it just creates struggle, right? I think it's exactly the same with our emotions. If you think that not being anxious is like a win or a victory, it creates the same type of performance anxiety, which makes us anxious, right? So I think the idea that doing something that has where we teach ourselves that there is no winning, there is no losing, that is really helpful. But then when we say, well, play frisbee is great for that, it sort of creates the same scenario. It's like, oh, I now like, winning becomes if I can play frisbee successfully to teach myself that there's no winning or losing, then I will win or something like that, right?
You just start, you put another layer on it, you think, oh, that's fine, and then you have this extra layer of I must be relaxed or I must find a way kind of thing. Oh no, it's fine, I don't need to find a way. Well, now I need to make sure that I'm not searching for a way
Right,
and
exactly.
that kind of thing, doesn't it? Which in a way is kind of the Mipassana thing. It's about kind of saying, well, like, if I'm trying to fix insomnia, that's not going to help. But am I necessarily trying to avoid fixing insomnia? That's still going to cause problem. Best thing to do is leave it to do what it feels like, whether it's fixing it or not fixing it, and work on the bit over there, which has nothing to do with fixing or not fixing, but rebuilding the useful parts of your life into your hobbies or your business or your whatever it is, your social life and that kind of thing, and working that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that brings me back to what you said about like you've seen like a pattern in many therapies that it starts off with like some type of like structured education, and then it may lead you towards more like behavioral activation, like doing things or something of that nature. And I think that is going back to what you just said about like what helps is just leaving the thing there and maybe living the life you want to live without making sleep or your emotions a variable. But it can be hard to do that immediately if you see somebody that's like in a struggle to just say, oh well, just forget about the struggle and live your life. They're not ready. So I think that it makes sense to
No.
do the education first, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. But like I said, I think a lot of it is kind of this grounding for you, to make you feel almost give you a sense that it's safe to try this return to normal life. It's like, oh
Yes.
yeah,
Yes.
actually, it's not dangerous for me to not be fixing this thing. I can start trying the normal things, the normal activities. And it's difficult because I know when I was in the throes of it, nothing made any kind of, you kind of lose a sense of what is your thing. As when I was into, I went to model railways, like I said, and running and other things. But you can lose the sense of what is what your thing starts to become. Sleep, not exactly. Obviously, you don't think, oh yeah, I'm a person who's really enthusiastic about fixing sleep, and that's a normal thing to be doing, as it were. But you can start doing things like obvious things are things like meditation and yoga and stuff that has that element of fixing sleep, fixing anxiety hidden in it. And you can kind of go into the sense of, is that actually what I'm wanting to do anymore? I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I've just, because we do change what we're interested in from time to time anyway. So you think, is yoga really my thing, or am I just doing it for, I suppose, fixing type outcome? And it's like I did some of these, what we call, I can't think of the word, but the coloring books that are supposed to help with anxiety. And until you're like, oh, I'm not interested in colouring books. That's so dull. My equivalent, my creativity is in my model railway or in writing or something like that. But nobody advertises model railways as being a way of relaxation. So you tend to think, oh, this is the best method. Like the frisbee thing, it's like that must be the way out, kind of thing. I like playing tennis, but I don't do it because it causes some effect on anxiety. But yet, you can end up pulling away from the normal things
Yeah,
because.
no, that's definitely true. And even something that can happen too is like what we used to do just for enjoyment in the past, when we're in the throes of insomnia, sort of becomes an effort too. It's like I hear a lot of people say, I used to actually meditate for no particular reason. I was just something I did, and now I have insomnia. And like, oh, I used to do that before, and now something we did simply because we liked it becomes an effort. So it's tricky, but I think yeah, I think just having this like honesty and kind of asking oneself here and there, like, am I doing this just because I like it, or am I actually trying to control things here? That can really give us that inner compass, I think.
Yeah, I think one of the things I had about how things backfire, how things can become sleep efforts, which you just reminded me of from the meditation idea, is that, let's say, for example, there are plenty of people who might meditate when they go to bed that has not don't have insomnia. It's nothing to do with that, or maybe in the evening. And people with insomnia may pick up on meditation as a thing to help sleep. And I see that the difference is that if it's your meditation for its own sake, you kind of start, you do your half hour or whatever, whatever happens, and that's fine. But if you're meditating with this idea that it's going to fix your sleep, you're kind of checking all the time. You're kind of looking for, well, you're checking, you're not checking whether it's working, you're checking for the danger of it not working. So you're kind of going, do I feel any more sleepy? Do I feel more relaxed? Perhaps I need to meditate more. Perhaps I need to find a better meditation. So you can be supposedly meditating for half an hour, but in parallel with that, you're doing all this kind of fear thinking kind of thing. And at the end of it, well, you've probably just been programming yourself to be even more anxious. Maybe not then again, but you tell your mind this is so important that this has got to work. That you again, you kind of program your brain to be fearful again.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's such a good point. Sometimes people ask me, like, hey, I'm doing this, Daniel. Like, is this a sleep effort or not? And then what you shared is basically what I answered. Like, if you're looking to see, like, as you're doing it, how it's working, but also after the fact, like if you're the day after said, oh, it didn't work or it worked, either one may seems, is a clue that, oh, there's an element of effort there, very much so. So Annie, we think we have a time for maybe one more concept already, if you have one.
Have you heard of Brené Brown? Don't know if you heard of
Yeah,
her.
I know the name, but not familiar with her teaching much at all, actually.
She's a sociologist, and she wrote a book called Daring Greatly, which a lot of it is to do with people's opinion of you and stuff like that. Are you willing to put yourself out there and be not look at your best, shall we say, or that kind of thing, or but you really want to do certain things. And this relates to the idea of not caring how you sleep. And what she said was, because she was talking about people who care what other people think of them, to an extent that it causes them problems, not being able to do things that help that are helpful for them. And she said, you're always going to care what people think of you. You can't, no one doesn't care unless they're a sociopath or something like that. But apart from that, everyone cares about what people think of you. But you don't have to be defined by it. So your life doesn't have to be about that. That's not your plan, if you like. So that kind of went in that same direction as Mapasti. Again, it was kind of course you're going to care whether you sleep. Of course you're going to care to some extent how much you sleep. But you don't have to define yourself by it. You don't have to say, I'm not going to see my friends because of how much I sleep. I'm not going to do my hobbies. I'm going to withdraw from things. Again, it's the same idea that the caring is a kind of emotional thing. So you can't just decide for it to be different. But you don't have to base what you're doing on it. I think that's,
Yeah,
again,
no,
it's
that's
a similar line of thing.
exactly. Like I have very little to add. I think it's exactly like that. It's so tricky because so many people that are asked, like, how did you get past your insomnia? They will say, like, well, I just stopped caring. But it's actually not true. What they're saying is not that they stopped caring. It just, like you said, it's like it became less defining to them, or didn't become everything. It was okay if they didn't sleep. That's much more true.
Yeah, it kind of sort of tentatively put a toe in the water of perhaps I'll try and do a bit of something more normal. Perhaps I'll meet my friend and not cancel just because I'm a bit tired and this kind of thing, and just move in that kind of direction.
Speaking more to you, I hear that Mapasti has a like it had a, like a maybe a specific origin, but it's almost like there are many ideas underneath Mapasti evolving into its own philosophy in a way.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't necessarily think there's. I think they all just. It just surprised me once I started thinking in those terms how many things seem to fit into it and more or less kind of work in the same way. Yeah, like I say, it was surprising that kind of thing. There are a lot of ways of teaching, a lot of ways of what's the other word? A lot of ways we can kind of get get to that point of an analyzing what we've been doing, or like I said, various knowledge about various things. But a lot of it comes down to that actual process of going back to the normality of your activity.
Living our free life, what we want to do. Yeah. Well, it's been super nice. I picked up a lot of things here, and I think that our community will learn a lot from you, Andrew. So I want to thank you
Thank
for
you.
guesting today.
Thanks, Daniel.
All
You're
right. So
great.
yeah, be well now and be in touch.
Okay, take care.